Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rounding Third Sports. I'm your host, Steve, and let's get started. Today, we're going to start with the NBA, talking about the play-in tournament, the playoffs, the standings, and what it's looking like right now. So, in the East, first off, well, before we get to that, let's talk about a couple of these teams. So, we have the Brooklyn Nets here, sitting at the number two seed right now. All right, this is the latest super team, if that's what you want to call it. You've got Kyrie, you've got Durant, you've got James Harden. Now, of course, the three of them together have not played many games this season where all three of them played. So we've had twos, we've had ones, you know, we've had a mixture of the three, but we have not had that much to see from these three together. They're on a four-game losing streak. They are, again, like I said, the number two seed right now. A quote I heard this morning from James Harden talking about their position, talking about where they sit in the standings and how many games are left and everything else. He was not concerned because in his words, he said the difference between the Nets and those other teams are they don't have the talent. Those are the words of James Harden, Brooklyn Nets. The other teams, they don't have the talent. Now, we're looking at a 76ers team with Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons. We're looking at a Milwaukee Bucks with Giannis. We're looking at a Knicks team that's got RJ Barrett. It's got Julius Randle. The Celtics, we know, with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So I can't say that I agree with him in the fact that nobody has talent that can challenge them. Now, if all three of them are healthy and playing, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt with that. That would be a hard team to beat. Look at Golden State when you had Durant, Curry, and Klay all on the court together. Throw in Draymond Green. You know, that's a good team. You look at the Heat when they had LeBron, D-Wade, and Bosh. When the three were on the court together, there was really not much competition. It was a lot of fun to watch. The Nets are now being compared to the old Detroit Pistons, the Bad Boys, I can't remember the other name they used, but the team that you love to hate. Because they'll say, this is what they said this morning, they'll say the things that others won't say because they don't care. You know, they will say how they feel, and that'll be that, and challenge them on the court if you need to, if you can. So, but looking at the Brooklyn Nets and this super team, they're the number two seed right now. They have lost four in a row. Their points per game, they're at 118.7. That's good for second in the East, behind the Bucks. But they've also given up their opponent's points per game is also the highest in the East. All right, and then let's look at another team. Let's look at the Lakers and LeBron. 37-28 right now. They're the sixth seed. So they're on the verge. They're a half a game out of the playoff or the play-in tournament right now. So they're at the sixth seed by a half a game. They're 3-7 in their division, averaging 109.4 points per game. And I know they've had injuries to LeBron. AD's missed a lot this year. But here's an interesting note about the Lakers and LeBron. So the quote he made the other day was that he doesn't think he'll ever be 100% again. That's what he said. So, and this is what the guys on the morning talk shows were absolutely destroying him on, is by making that statement, he has now created an excuse that if they don't win, well, it's because LeBron was hurt. It was because AD missed a lot. Now I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, and they had AD they didn't have him long this season. He spent a lot of time out. And when we've seen in the past that LeBron does not carry a team by himself. Now, outside of those early Cleveland years where he was able to lead them, but a team of the caliber of the Lakers, you've got Kyle Kuzma, you've got others that could step up. I don't know. But by him making the statement that he doubts he'll ever be back to 100% is an excuse for if they don't win this year, that's why. Because, well, LeBron wasn't 100%. Now, those are words, and I'll give a little bit of opinion on this debate in a minute, but this will be the most divisive thing I'll say about it. Those words are something you would never hear, and you never did hear, out of Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan played through food poisoning. He played through injuries. Now, the only thing I will say about the debate is that I know that this is the most talked about debate of greatest in history in all sports. But hear me out as to why this is not a debate. And I have not. This is not something I just came up with. I've been saying this for a long time now. The debate between who is the greatest of all time, who's the GOAT, is not between MJ and LeBron. And I'm not going to get into who would be in that debate, but you cannot compare LeBron and MJ, and here's why. They are two completely different players. Their styles are completely different. The way they play the game, completely different. That you can't compare them. They're not comparable. Now, if you wanted to compare LeBron to, I don't know, and I'm not saying you would, but I'm just thinking of players that are that size and comparable type of players. I would think of Zion. I would think of maybe a Kawhi. Maybe a Grant Hill type player. But MJ and LeBron are not comparable styles of players. And so I don't understand all of the drama and all the craziness of wanting to compare those two, and that the debate is between those two. Or the debate of who is better. Maybe I should say that. Maybe I shouldn't say the debate of GOAT, because the debate about greatest of all time, you could compare them, I guess. Now that I'm thinking about it, if you're talking about the greatest of all time, you would talk about all positions. You would talk about your point guards, your John Stocktons, your Kyrie's, your Magic Johnson, you would talk about your centers. You would talk about, you were talking about different players from different positions. So I was incorrect in saying that. My statement here is more related to the debate of who is the better player, LeBron or Michael Jordan. That is the debate that is not really a debate. You cannot debate that because, again, they are two, their styles of play are completely different. Their size is not comparable. Their personalities, as much as you want to think they might be comparable, they're not. And I think this whole thing with LeBron and his injury right now proves it. Okay, enough of that talk for today. Let's look at these standings and look what the play-in tournament would look like right now. So right now, this again, the play-in tournament is the 7 through 10 seeds in a fight to determine who is going to be the 7 and who's going to be the 8. So how this tournament works, just in case you've forgotten or haven't listened to my podcast before, the way the play-in debate works, the 7 seed and the 8 seed play each other. The winner is the 7 seed in the NBA tournament, NBA playoffs. The 9 and 10 seed then play each other, and the winner of that game plays the loser of the 7 and 8 game. And then the winner of that game is the 8 seed in the playoffs. All right? So now that we've gotten that squared away. In the East right now, 7 seed Miami Heat, 8 seed Charlotte Hornets, 9 seed Indiana Pacers, 10 seed Washington Wizards. So Miami and Charlotte would play each other. The winner would be the 7 seed. Indiana and Washington would play each other. The winner would play the loser of the other game for the 8 seed. Okay? Now, Miami is actually tied for the 6th seed right now. So there's still a lot of potential for movement. There's the 11 and 12 seeds are only 3.5, a maximum of 3.5 games behind the 10 seed. So there's, I mean, when you're looking at the play-in, I would say there's 5 games left. I would say the 4 seed through the 12 seed are all in contention to be stuck in the play-in tournament right now. All right, let's go to the West. Right now, Portland is the 7 seed, Memphis 8, Golden State 9, San Antonio 10. So we would have Portland against Memphis, Golden State against San Antonio. All right. There's still 2 teams there. So here it's between the 5 seed and the 12 seed that could fall into that play-in tournament range. So a lot of movement still to come. 5 games. I believe I heard there's 5 games left. We could have a very interesting tournament. If it sat where it lies right now, there would be at least one team under 500 in the playoffs. Because the 8, 9, and 10 seed in the East are all under 500 right now. And the 10 seed in the West is under 500. The 9 seed is 500. All right, that's NBA. Again, you guys know how I feel about the NBA. You guys know I like to keep the NBA kind of quick, kind of, you know, I follow it, but I would much rather sit here and talk about baseball, football, college, you know, that more. So let's transition over to baseball. All right, so we'll talk about baseball leading all the way up to the break, and we'll talk football after the break. So, interesting, I guess, event in Major League Baseball. Well, I guess Minor League Baseball. So, San Francisco Giants, AAA roster. There was a man by the name of Drew Robinson who made the roster. Now, you say, you know, minor league players make rosters all the time. What's the big deal here? So Drew Robinson, if you don't know, lost his eye in a suicide attempt last year. He lost his right eye. And then now, a year later, made the opening day roster for the AAA San Francisco Giants affiliate, which is the Sacramento River Cats. And he could play as soon as tomorrow. No, sorry. This was May. No, he could actually, he played yesterday. I had my dates wrong. Sorry. He actually played in the game yesterday. Now, unfortunately, he went hitless, but he played. So this young man, he's 29 years old. 6 months after, again, a suicide attempt. I'm not going to go into the details of this. This is not my. If you want to know the details, go to ESPN. I'm just not going to talk about somebody's that depth of somebody's situation. All right. Just know that he had an attempted suicide last year, and this year he's making a minor league roster. So he had a late spring surge in his performance during minor league spring training. And so the Giants are giving him a chance. So he went hitless Thursday night. So the Sacramento Rivercats lost 8-1 to the Las Vegas Aviators. And he actually struck out four times. So a sad end to his opening day, but there's a full season ahead for him. So hopefully, he can figure that out and get back to performing somewhat decently. So potentially more to come on him. We'll see what happens. Again, he's in AAA. So we'll see what happens over the course of the season. But just an interesting note that he's able to come back from something like that. All right, on Wednesday, we saw another no-hitter in Major League Baseball. We saw John Means from the Baltimore Orioles come one pitch short of a perfect game. So he pitched a no-hitter, retired all 27 batters he faced, but he allowed a base runner when there was a third strike wild pitch in the third inning. Now, the good thing is that player, Sam Haggerty, attempted to steal second base and was thrown out. But because there was a wild pitch, it does negate the perfect game bid. Now, interesting note of trivia, Means is believed to be the first pitcher in Major League Baseball history to lose a perfect game on a third strike wild pitch. He's the first pitcher to throw a non-perfect no-hitter with no walks, no hit batters, and no errors. So, again, fun fact, trivia question for the future. The only player right now to throw a non-perfect no-hitter with no walks, no hit batters, and no errors. John Means, Baltimore Orioles. On May 5th, 2021. It's the first individual no-hitter for the Orioles since Jim Palmer in 1969. Another little trivia note there. The longest stretch for any team in the majors without an individual no-hitter. Now, in 1991, they had a four-pitcher combined no-hitter, but the first individual since 1969. So now that Baltimore has had a player to do it, the longest active streak now without an individual no-hitter is the Pittsburgh Pirates. Their last one came in 1976 from John Candelaria. And then after that is the Cleveland Indians, 1981 from Len Barker. So, again, I like my trivia. Maybe one day I'll do a trivia episode, but the now longest active streak without an individual no-hitter belongs to the Pittsburgh Pirates. So that brought me to thinking, because I know that there have been multiple no-hitters this season. So I want to pull up and talk about these no-hitters. And I know I've got to find it. There we go. Yes. So this season, we've had three. All right. All of last season, I know last season was a condensed season, we had two. In 2019, there were four. 2018, three. 2017, one. 2016, one. So the last time we had a large number was in 2015, when there were seven, two of which were Max Scherzer. And two, oh, and then Jake Arrieta from the Cubs did it 2 years in a row. So in 2021 so far, April 9th, Joe Musgrove from the Padres did it against the Rangers. April 14th, so 5 days later, Carlos Rodon from the White Sox did it against the Indians. And then now May 5th, John Means from the Orioles. And of course, the one that's not mentioned on here is the one that was under nine innings. And they should have that listed. Yeah, April 25th, Madison Bumgarner pitched a no-hit seven-inning game. So technically, there's been four no-hitters this season. So, next man up. Who's next? I mean, if you asked me at the beginning of the year who would do it, those three names would now Carlos Rodon might be on that list. But I don't think I would have been able to guess Joe Musgrove, and especially not John Means. All right, let's talk about a player that was released from his team or was designated for assignment that came as a surprise. And why looking at his stats tells you it's not really that big of a surprise. So yesterday news broke that Albert Pujols was designated for assignment by the Los Angeles Angels. Now, again, I say it's shocking. You know, you would not expect a guy that has a career 298 average, who's hit 667 home runs in his career, would be designated for assignment. But let's look at some of these stat lines here. This season, he's batting 198 with five home runs. Last season was – so he has been declining since 2016. Now, he's 41 years old. So his last season that he batted above 250 was 2016 when he batted 268. He's still averaging roughly 20 home runs a year, probably over, because he's had years where he's hit 30, 40 plus. Now, with the Angels, he only has a 256 average. With the Cardinals, he had a 328 average. So that's a little bit interesting to note. So we'll have to see what happens from here. Does he call it quits? Does somebody sign him? Or trade for him or whatever? We'll have to see what happens. Hopefully somebody picks it up. I hope this is not how his career ends. I think that would be sad. I would hate to see a player of his caliber go out that way. But we're just going to have to wait and see. Some people were calling for the Cardinals to sign him. You know, let him finish his career with the Cardinals. That'd be fine. You know, I wouldn't see any harm in that. The only problem is they don't have a DH being in the National League. So that makes it hard because really you're gonna need a team from the American League to sign him. That way he can play DH. So we'll have to see what happens there. But hopefully somebody picks him up. He can at least finish out this season. You know, give him some kind of farewell tour and call an end to the career of one of the greatest first basemen in Major League Baseball history. All right, let's look at the standings. Let's look at what our projection would be. So this is week 5. So just as a quick recap, the Dodgers have been my selection to represent the National League all 5 weeks. And the American League has had 3 teams in 4 weeks make the World Series, with Boston now leading it 2 weeks in a row. So let's start in the American League. The 1 seed is actually now Oakland. So this is Oakland's second time being the 1 seed. So then you would have Boston against the Indians. So this is the Indians' second time in the playoffs, first time leading the division. And then the wild card game, you'd have the White Sox and the Royals. So the only different team this year or this week is the Indians replaced the Mariners, actually. All right. In the American League, the number 1 seed is actually a tie right now, again, between St. Louis and San Fran. So what we'll do is, I think last time we went by, did we go by run scored? I think we went by run scored. So that would make St. Louis the number 1 seed. And that is their first time being in the playoffs, being in the lead of the division. So then that would put San Fran against Philly as the 2 and 3 game. And that is the Phillies' third time in the playoffs. So 3 out of 5. And the wild card then would be the Padres and the Brewers. Padres and the Brewers. So this is the first time the Dodgers have not made the playoffs. Again, the way I do this is the playoffs are as if the season ended as of today. So that means there's going to be a new team for the first time representing the National League in the World Series of this projection. So I am going to go with, from the American League, I'm still going to go with Boston. I can't seem to get away from picking them. So I'm going to go with Boston from the American League. That's 3 weeks in a row for them. From the National League, man, this is a tough one because I'm between 3 teams. I'm between San Diego, San Francisco, and St. Louis. I don't think San Fran stays where they're at. I think they will eventually drop out. But if it ended right now, I think I'd have to go with St. Louis. Boston, St. Louis. I would hate to see that in a World Series, but that's what it's going to be right now. All right. I'm going to take a quick break. When I come back, like I said, we will jump right into NFL. We'll talk about some teams releasing players. We'll talk about some teams looking to add players. We'll talk post-draft questions and draft takeaways for college. So stay tuned, and I will be right back. Welcome back. And we are going to jump right into the NFL. So this week we had a couple NFL teams released some players that I wanted to talk about. So the Lions released running back Kerryon Johnson. Now, Johnson, if you don't remember, was drafted out of Auburn in 2018 in the second round by Detroit. But then last year, of course, you know, DeAndre Swift from Georgia got drafted, had a pretty good season. And then Detroit goes out and also signs free agent running back Jamal Williams in March, and then just drafted Oregon State's Jamar Jefferson last week during the draft. So Kerryon Johnson became expendable. Now, if you're like me, my original thought was, wow, Kerryon Johnson. I mean, that's a pretty big name. Kerryon Johnson did some great things in Detroit. But then when you look at his stats, you're like, what? So Johnson ran for 1,225 yards and 8 touchdowns over 3 seasons. So those numbers don't really scream elite running back. That's for sure. So obviously that's why he became expendable. But in last season, he only had 181 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns. But again, he was not the premier running back for the team. So Kerryon Johnson becomes available. So let's look at the teams that were in position to potentially draft a running back. All right, we have teams like Atlanta, Miami, Arizona, and Tampa Bay. We're all in position in need of a running back from the draft and did not draft one. Unless it was in the 7th round, because of course I don't think I updated this after the 7th round. So I can see a team like Miami and even Arizona. I don't see Kerryon Johnson ending up in Atlanta. I wouldn't be opposed to it as a Falcons fan. I wouldn't be opposed to it. But I could see him ending up in a Miami or a Arizona to help out there. All right, another player of note that was released yesterday came out that Miami Dolphins were going to release starting safety Bobby McCain. And then they also reached a deal with Jason McCourty. So McCain was a team captain for the Dolphins. Now, it is interesting to note that Jason McCourty he left New England. Not only that he went to Miami, a divisional rival, but that he left New England. McCain was a 5th-round draft pick in 2015, had 46 tackles and 1 interception last season. In his 6 seasons with the team, he had 7 interceptions, 4 sacks, and a forced fumble. He is actually scheduled to visit the Washington football team on a free agent visit on Monday. So this move helps Miami. It creates $5.6 million in cap space. So, hey, there's your money to go out and get Kerryon Johnson. The Dolphins also selected a free safety in the 2nd round of the draft, Javon Holland. So he looks to become the team's defensive leader. So let's look again at teams that needed to draft or had a team need of a safety in the draft. So Carolina, Dallas, Minnesota, Tennessee, Baltimore, Buffalo, and Houston all had safety listed. Oh, and New Orleans. I missed that one. New Orleans was another one. So there's 8 teams. And interesting enough, Washington was not on that list because they actually did draft a safety. So I could see potentially Baltimore or Buffalo. You know, if this guy was a team captain, that means he was a premier leader for the team. So I could see a team like Baltimore, Buffalo, Tennessee grabbing him as they attempt to continue their success in their divisions. Minnesota's a possibility. I don't see that really working out. Dallas, it's a potential. Carolina, I don't see that happening. But I could see a team like Tennessee, Baltimore, or Buffalo going after him. All right, let's look now at an article that ESPN put out. It's the biggest questions, biggest offseason questions. Team needs rookie battles for all 32 teams. So I like looking at these things, I like talking about them. So we're going to jump right into the AFC East and talk about the Buffalo Bills. So will Gregory Rousseau and Carlos Basham Jr. help revitalize the Bills' pass rush? So obviously, Gregory Rousseau was a first-round draft pick, which was not it. I mean, it was a team need, but they had bigger needs. But we think about the history here. Buffalo was not able to pressure Mahomes in the AFC Championship game last season. And we think back, what stopped Kansas City in the Super Bowl? Tampa Bay's pass rushing. So Buffalo going out and trying to improve their pass rushing makes sense. All right. Miami Dolphins, will Myles Gaskin be the lead running back again? So the hope was obviously they would draft one of the three running backs: Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams. Didn't happen. So the only running back they added was in the seventh round, Jared Doakes or Doakes. Last year, Gaskin was the lead running back. So that what this is screaming, I can stop reading this part right here. Because I'm telling you, this screams Miami needs to sign Kerryon Johnson. That's what that tells me right there. It makes sense. If Myles Gaskin is your premier running back, you need to sign Kerryon Johnson. Because behind Gaskin, you have veteran free agent Malcolm Brown and second year back Salvin Ahmed. So it even says here, keep your eye peeled for a post-draft signing or trade. But as of now, the Dolphins haven't done anything. So I'm calling it now. Kerryon Johnson to the Dolphins. All right, New England. Did the Patriots do enough at wide receivers? Obviously, they lost Julian Edelman to quote-unquote retirement. And the only receiver they picked up in the draft was their final pick, which was number 242 overall, Central Florida's Trey Nixon. He joins Nelson Aguilar, Kendrick Bourne, Jakobi Meyers, and N'Keal Harry as the team's wide receiver depth chart. I don't think they did enough. I think they need to do more. I don't think that's good for Cam Newton or Mac Jones. That's your wide receiver class or your wide receiver group. New York Jets, is new quarterback Zach Wilson set up for success? Free agency, the Jets signed Corey Davis and Keelan Cole. In the draft, they grabbed left guard Elijah Vera Tucker, wide receiver Elijah Moore, and running back Michael Carter. I would say that the Jets set him up for success. I would say Zach Wilson is in a position to do well right out of the gate in the NFL. I applaud the Jets. I think they drafted very well. And I think they really are trying to improve their organization, which is the first time since the late 2000s. When you go back to the Rex Ryan days, the days of what's his name? The days of I lost it. Revis, Darrelle Revis. Wow. Yeah, the days of Darrelle Revis. That's the last time they were really of any importance. Moving over to the AFC North, the Baltimore Ravens, what's the plan to replace right tackle Orlando Brown Jr.? So obviously that was a big trade made right there at the beginning of the draft or right before the draft. So obviously everything pointed to them signing a free agent. And this article was actually written before Villanueva signed. So that was their answer. They went out and they signed Alejandro Villanueva from the Pittsburgh Steelers. So perfect. They filled that. They answered that question. Baltimore set up good. Cincinnati, have the Bengals done enough to protect Joe Burrow? So they signed Riley Reiff in free agent, drafted Jamar Chase in the first round, and then took an offensive lineman in the second round of Jackson Carmen. They're banking on its current moves, an improved passing attack, new assistant coach, hoping to boost their offensive line. So to be determined, I would say, on that one. The Browns. Can the Browns handle high expectations? I would say they are set up to. They're going to get Odell Beckham Jr. back. They're bringing back Sheldon Richardson. They got Jadeveon Clowney. I'd say they are most likely going to be one of the top teams, if not the top team in the AFC North, fighting with Baltimore. And I think they might be a team to beat in the AFC in general. So you have the Kansas City, you have Cleveland, you have Buffalo. I would say those would be your teams to beat in the AFC. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, how will they replenish the cornerback position? So they didn't take a defensive back until the seventh round, even though they released Steven Nelson and Mike Hilton signed with the Bengals in free agency. So they're going to need help at the cornerback position. Moving over to the AFC South, the Houston Texans, have they done enough to improve at cornerback? I feel like I just read this. They added Desmond King and Terrence Mitchell in free agency, but they're wondering if that's going to be enough for them to improve. Indianapolis, who will protect quarterback Carson Wentz blindside next season? So they went into the draft with questions at left tackle following Anthony Costanzo's retirement, and they left the draft with still those same questions. They did not select a left tackle with any of their seven picks. Now their general manager says, how many true left tackles were in the draft? Some of these guys, maybe they end up playing left tackle. If you're going to draft a guy that high and you're drafting him to play left tackle, you'd like to know that he's going to be able to do it for his whole career. So I get that. I understand that perspective. So right now it looks like they're looking at Sam Tevy to get the first crack at starting at left tackle. The Jaguars, what are they going to do at tight end? So they have blocking options in Chris Manhertz, and they drafted Luke Farrell from Ohio State, but they didn't add a pass-catching tight end in the draft. Urban Meyer said the value really wasn't there. Now, even if they signed Tim Tebow, that guy's never played tight end in his career. He hasn't been in the NFL in 9 years. Isn't that interesting? It's been 9 years since Tim Tebow's been in the NFL. Now they have options of trade. They have Zach Ertz, David Njoku, Evan Engram, Hayden Hurst. You know, they could go out and get one of those guys in trade, but as it sits right now, they could use a pass-catching tight end. Now, I think Luke Farrell can be a pass-catching tight end, so we'll see what happens there. But they're not convinced. The Tennessee Titans. Who will be the primary slot receiver? That's their question. They don't have an answer yet. I'm going to kind of move through these a little bit quicker now. Denver, will the Drew Lock, Teddy Bridgewater quarterback competition be enough to take advantage of all the other moves the team has made? So barring a franchise-shaking, history-making acquisition of Aaron Rodgers, the Broncos have invested heavily in improving their defense. They grabbed Patrick Surtain, Javonte Williams. They're making changes to their team. But they passed on Justin Fields at number 9. They traded for Teddy Bridgewater. So we'll see what happens there. Kansas City, who plays where on the offensive line? So you've got Orlando Brown Jr., who's a left tackle. You've got Joe Tooney, who's a left guard. But your other three spots, your center, your right guard, and right tackle are all position battles. So the good part is they have their blind side taken care of with Joe Tooney and Orlando Brown Jr. Las Vegas Raiders, when can they assemble and see what they have? It's a good question. Not really a important one, I wouldn't say. Do the Chargers have a good enough kicker? They re-signed Michael Badgley, added Tristan Vizcaino. Badgley converted 24 of 33 field goal attempts last season, but all misses came from beyond 40 yards. All right, moving over to the NFC. What will Dallas do at free safety? They added Keanu Neal, Jayron Kearse, and DeMonte Casey in free agency, but Neal could end up playing some linebacker. Casey's coming off an Achilles tear. So there are questions there. Now, one answer could be McCain. That seems like a good fit right there. But we'll see, because they did sign these three players. I don't know if they'll go signing another one. What does the New York Giants do about their offensive line? That's a great question. They're looking at last year's draft class. Andrew Thomas, Matt Peart, Shane Lemieux to really help out Daniel Jones. Philly is looking to see who's going to play cornerback opposite Darius Slay. Washington's trying to figure out their free safety situation. Chicago, when will Justin Fields become the starter? The Bears prefer to play it safe and begin the season with Andy Dalton at quarterback, but the pressure to start Fields will be palpable. The last thing the Bears want is a repeat of what happened with Mitchell Trubisky in 2017, when veteran Mike Glennon struggled so mightily in 4 games that Chicago had no choice but to turn to Trubisky before he was ready. That being said, the city of Chicago is in a fever pitch over Fields, who many believe could be the franchise's first true franchise quarterback in 70-plus years. The majority of the fan base never felt that way about Trubisky. So the countdown to Fields becoming the starting quarterback is on. It has begun. Detroit, who will emerge as Jared Goff's primary target? So you have TJ Hockenson. But that's really about it. Here's the biggest question, probably this whole article. Who will be the Green Bay Packers quarterback? And I think I'm going to end this discussion, this article, just talking about that one. I'm going to scroll through here real quick just to see if there's any other questions here that I want to talk about. And no, I don't believe so. Okay. Let's talk the Green Bay Packers and their quarterback situation. Let's start with this question. Do I think that Aaron Rodgers will be the Green Bay Packers quarterback this season? And as much as I would like to give a solid answer, I don't know that I can. Because here's what you have. In Aaron Rodgers' mind, he's done in Green Bay. In Green Bay's mind, Aaron Rodgers is their quarterback. So unless Aaron Rodgers, so there's only really two situations that can come out of this. One is obviously that Green Bay trades their quarterback. Now, in my opinion, if they were going to do that, they should have done that either probably before the draft. Because you could have gotten one of the top three picks, top four picks for Aaron Rodgers. Plus a plethora of draft picks. So they could trade him. The only other option, if Aaron Rodgers is not going to play in Green Bay, is if he does what Carson Palmer did and he retires. He goes home, sits out a year, comes back next year, signs with a new team. Now, does he do that? I don't know. I guess it would depend on how fed up he is with Green Bay. But he only has three options. He either plays with Green Bay trades him, or he retires and then comes back next year with another team. All right, real quick, one more note about baseball before I talk about this last article on college football. So last week I did the May predictions for Major League Baseball. So I said that, or I didn't say, the bold predictions for Major League Baseball. There's already two that are probably done. All right. The first one, Dustin May is the National League Player of the Month. Not going to happen. Dustin May got injured. He's having Tommy John surgery. So that's already a failed prediction. The other one is Joey Votto. Joey Votto injured his thumb. He's most likely going to miss the entire month. So already that those bold predictions are down for the month of May in Major League Baseball. All right, college football takeaways from the draft. So let's look at some of these notes and then give my thoughts. First one is the SEC dominated as usual. Now that's ESPN saying that. It is what it is. But you can't argue the SEC led with 65 players drafted out of the 259 picks in the NFL draft. The most by a single conference in the common draft era, which is 1967. The previous record was also held by SEC at 64. 2 years ago. And actually, the SEC holds the top four most picks in the common draft era. So this year they had 65. 2 years ago they had 64. Last year was 63. And then 2013 was 63 also. Also, a side note, at least one pick this season was from all 14 schools. So all 14 schools in the SEC had at least one player picked, drafted. Obviously, you have the notables. You have Ja'Marr Chase, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Kadarius Toney. I don't know how they didn't put Kyle Pitts on that list. I would have. Also, among those selections were the four wide receivers, Chase, Waddle, Smith, and Toney. It's the first time in the common draft era that four wide receivers from the same conference were selected in the first round of a single draft. So that's another little trivia bit right there. First time in common draft era that one conference had four wide receivers selected in the first draft, in the first round. Behind the SEC was the ACC, which had 51 picks. Technically, they had 42 picks because Notre Dame, as much as the ACC wants to claim them, and even though they played in the ACC last year, Notre Dame is still an independent. So I'll give you 42, not 51, because Notre Dame had nine selections, which means the Big Ten was actually second with 44, the Pac-12 at 28, and the Big 12 at 22. Now, Alabama also had a historic days. Alabama had a historic draft. They had six players selected in the first round, tying 24, tying 2004's Miami Hurricanes record for a single school. They had 8 players taken in the first 2 rounds, which was a record. So obviously the first rounders, Waddle, Surtain, Smith, Mac Jones, Alex Leatherwood, and Najee Harris. Christian Barmore is the 12th player drafted. So here's a little side note too. Christian Barmore, defensive tackle, is the 12th player drafted by Bill Belichick from a Nick Saban college team, the most by any such head coach combination in the Common Draft era. So if you look at the schools with the most players taken in the first 2 rounds, the top 2, this year's Alabama team at 8, and then there's actually a 6-way tie with 7, and that's the last year's Alabama team, last year's LSU team, the 2017 Alabama team, 2016 Ohio State Buckeyes, the 2008 USC Trojans, and the 2000 Tennessee Volunteers. Alabama also had a quarterback, running back, and wide receiver drafted in the first round, which was just the second time in the common draft era, a school has had all 3 positions taken in the first round. The other time happened last year with LSU, with Joe Burrow going to Cincinnati, Justin Jefferson going to Minnesota, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire going to Kansas City. And of course, this year was Jones going to New England, Harris going to Pittsburgh, and then Waddle going to where did Waddle go? Detroit. And Smith going to the Eagles. With 10 picks in 2021, and I will say this about this article. This article gives no recognition to Ohio State matching this feat. But with 10 picks in 2021, Alabama has had 51 picks over the past 5 drafts, tying USC back in the 70s for the most NFL draft picks over any 5-year span. The other side note here is with 10 picks, Ohio State and Alabama were tied with the most players drafted. For the first time in history, the Big 12 went without a first-round draft selection. For the 10th straight year, the conference had the fewest amount of draft picks. Along with that, there were 6 other Power 5 schools without draft picks. 6 other Power 5 schools without draft picks in the entire draft. Kansas, Utah, Washington State, Michigan State, Rutgers, and Virginia. Those 6 teams had no players drafted. The most notable, obviously, is Michigan State, which previously had gone 80 straight drafts with a player selected, the 3rd longest streak in NFL history. USC, Michigan, and Florida are now the only schools to have a player selected in every draft of the Common Draft era. There you go, another trivia note. USC, who were the only 3 teams to have a player selected in every draft of the Common Draft era? USC, Michigan, and Florida. BYU, Brigham Young, they had 5 players picked in the draft this year, including the number 2 overall in Zach Wilson. I already talked about the reunions happening. Talked about that last week. Other notable draft tidbits. They have a piece called the quote of the draft. I'm not going to be able to finish this. But Amari Rodgers, Clemson wide receiver that went to Green Bay, was asked why he went to Clemson instead of Tennessee. And he said, quote, "I wanted to win. That's why." All right. I am going to end there because I'm going to run out of time if I don't. So thank you again for watching. Check out my Instagram, Rounding Third Sports. Drop a like, drop a comment. And I will be back again next week. Have a great week, everybody.